I'm a foodie and I enjoy learning about the process that brings great foods and beverages from idea to the table. And then I like tasting them and learning the nuances of what creates the most significant tastes, from coffee to cheese to distilled beverages. I did a tequila tasting in Mexico and recently bourbon, Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It really impressed me from the story to the taste. I grew up in Kentucky where horse racing and bourbon are famous, and I got introduced to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It's produced by Heaven Hill Distillery, which has been and still remains family-owned since 1935, and I'm impressed with the bourbon's ultra-rich, smooth taste, and right on the bottle, it states that this bourbon is 7 years old, which is actually three times longer than what's required to be certified as bottled in bond. I feel with beverages, the longer the prep, the better the taste. Being a bottled in bond product means it must pass a list of seven requirements that set the standard for this quality bourbon. So look for it at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Self-Helpful Podcast is brought to you by Ziglar, your premier source for equipping coaches to help leaders and top performers excel professionally and personally. Visit Ziglar.com and let them inspire your true coaching performance.
Today's episode is brought to you in part by Mile IQ. From appointments with clients and meetings and errands, I mean, unless you're chained to your desk all day, then you're one of the 60 million Americans who drives for work. If you're driving for work and aren't already using Mile IQ, then you're definitely losing money fast. Mile IQ is the number one mileage tracker app. More than a million Americans trust Mile IQ to automatically log their drives every day. So text Ziglar to 31996 to start your 40-day free trial. You can create an account this week and you'll get 20% off an annual plan. So again, text Ziglar, Z-I-G-L-A-R, to this number, 31996.
Built around the concept that you can have everything in life you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want.
Well, remember, you were born to win. But in order to be the winner you were born to be, you got to plan to win, you got to prepare to win, and then and only then can you legitimately expect to win. You see, with integrity, you do the right thing. When you do the right thing, there's no guilt. With integrity, you have nothing to fear because you have nothing to hide. See, folks, failure's an event. It's not a person. Yesterday really did end last night. Today's a brand new day, and it's yours.
Friends, welcome to The Ziglar Show. I'm your host, Kevin Miller, and it is my unique privilege to bring today's profound message to you. The Ziglar Show is founded on what Zig Ziglar, the world's most prolific motivator, devoted his life to, inspiring your true performance. You can have the best tools, resources, and even opportunity, but unless you are truly inspired, you'll be hopeful but remain where you are. What is the definition of inspired? Listen to this. To influence or animate with an idea or purpose. Did you hear that? Animate with a purpose. If you want to take action, you have to know and be motivated by true purpose. That's deep, folks, and it is why you are here. Let's dig in and change your world so you can change this world. We need all you've got to offer desperately. Hey, Ziglar evangelists. Today, I bring you a big Ziglar fan, one of the biggest, an advocate, a supporter, a chief evangelist, and one of the top radio and podcast kings on planet Earth. Best-selling author many, many times over, Mr. Financial Peace, Dave Ramsey. For anyone listening to this show, there's less than a 1% chance you aren't pretty well aware of who Dave Ramsey is. If you happen to be one of the 1% who are not, I'll tell you, Dave Ramsey, I mean, he's America's trusted voice on money and business. He's also authored five New York Times best-selling books, Financial Peace, More Than Enough, The Total Money Makeover, Entree Leadership, and Smart Money, Smart Kids. The Dave Ramsey Show is heard by more than 11 million listeners each week on more than 550 radio stations and digitally through podcasts, online audio streaming, and a 24-hour online streaming video channel. So you can follow Ramsey on Twitter at Dave Ramsey and find out all you desire on the web at DaveRamsey.com. And hey, you got to check out, they've got a brand new online budget tool, Every Dollar. It's free and it helps users get on track and stay on track with their budget. So you can get more information at everydollar.com. I checked it out myself. I'm going to let my wife look at it and I think we'll start using it for our own personal finances. Well, hey, the reason that we have Dave on the show today is threefold. I mean, number one, he's a chief purveyor of the Ziglar message. Number two, he's a rock star celebrity with an incredible message that spawned a movement in America and beyond. And three, I have a little personal history with Dave reaching back 25 years that we'll talk about here in a minute. But friends, in this podcast, I'm not going to give too much focus to asking Dave the same, you know, financial questions that I think most interviews contain with him. He hasn't been prepped on the questions I am going to ask, and I'm going to go to some root issues of personal development that, well, I honestly don't know how he'll respond. It's going to be a treat for sure. Interesting as much to me as it is to you. So he's going to join us in just a moment. I want to make a call out to a couple things. One, Tom Ziglar, we've got a special little Christmas message. It's actually a short clip, a Christmas clip that Zig recorded a couple years ago that we're going to share with you and then let Tom talk to you about what Christmas was like in the Ziglar home. And it's really special to hear some of the things that stood out for him. And then we'll tell you a little bit about some of the, I'm going to have him run through some of the Ziglar Christmas specials, what the products are in there as well. So that's a special show that we're going to insert next week that you can look for. It's just about 15, 16 minutes. On that note, you know, with Christmas though, Ziglar does, we obviously hit a vein with this year's Ziglar Christmas specials as they're being purchased in record numbers. Matter of fact, they ran out of stock of something today and they're scrambling to get it back in there as the orders come in. So I'm just a call out to not let your Christmas shopping end without taking advantage of one of the best product package offers that Ziglar's ever allowed. And without blessing someone's life in a dramatic way, I mean, give some gifts that will be remembered forever, that will change lives for the better, create legacies. So right now you can get the specials immediately. You can get the link to the Christmas special page. Quickest way is just text it with your phone. You can write this down. Type text Ziglar, Ziglar, to this number, 38470. Okay, so just text it to the number 38470. Text the word Ziglar, and you'll get that link right away. Or you can just go to Ziglar.com, just go to the website, and there's a little button on there to check out the Christmas special, so you can do that. So help some folks get what they want from life so that you can get what you want as well. Hey, another proud supporter of the Ziglar Show is a top-ranked podcast called Ventured. It's a series produced by iconic venture capital firm Kleiner Perkins, who's invested in Google and Amazon and Twitter and Uber. The Ventured podcast takes a close look at some of the fastest growing tech trends in Silicon Valley, as well as behind the scenes interviews with tech giants from companies like Netflix and Google. You can find the show by searching Ventured in iTunes or SoundCloud. All right, folks, if you're ready to dive into some uncharted territory, I hope, with Dave Ramsey and discuss some specific personal development issues, here we go. I'm bringing Dave in and Tom Ziglar into the show. I want to thank Lynda.com as a sponsor of today's show. Lynda.com is the leading online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. Lynda.com is for problem solvers, for the curious, and for people who want to make things happen. That's what we love at Ziglar, people who make things happen. So maybe you want to master Excel or learn negotiation tactics or build a website or boost your Photoshop skills. The Lynda.com membership will give you unlimited access to training on hundreds of topics, all for one flat rate. So whether you're looking to become an industry expert, or you're passionate about a hobby, or you just want to learn something new, you need to visit lynda.com/Ziglar and sign up for your free 10-day trial. That's lynda.com/Ziglar.
Z-I-G-L-A-R. All right, folks, we're going to kick this show off by listening to an 18-minute audio of Dave Ramsey sharing his personal story. Now, this is a recent recording, and it's profound. I thought I knew the story, and I took a lot out of it. I mean, I was really impacted by this this video here. It's a video that we'll actually put on the Ziglar blog, but of course, we're going to play just the audio here. But he takes us through the journey of his rise to wealth, his catastrophic crash, and then what led him in the direction of his current business that has changed our nation. But more importantly, throughout this brief story, he just gives some incredible insights that I'm going to ask you to listen in. And then I'm going to bring Dave Ramsey and Tom Ziglar into the studio, and we're going to dig in to some of these insights. I think you're going to find some things that really resonate with you, motivate you, but maybe help you give yourself permission and open your eyes to some things that you can do that maybe you didn't think you could before. All right, here then we go.
Most really big things start with a pretty simple story.
Ramseys are workers. I've worked, feels like, my whole life. And I've never complained about it. I'm not whining about it. I mean, but I remember when I was 12 years old, I came in and I asked my dad, I was going to ride my bicycle. I used to ride my bike down to the local Quicksack. It was about a mile down the road from us, and came in and asked my dad for some money to get an icy at the Quicksack. And he says, you know, how old are you? And I said, well, your son, I'm 12, you know these things. And he said, well, that means you need a job. You don't need money, because that's where money comes from. I'm like, well, he said, what could you do to earn some money? And I said, well, some of my buddies are cutting grass. I guess I could cut grass. And he went, good, get in the car. So, true story, he took me down on Nolensville Road in the Woodbine area there in old Nashville to a print shop. And the old-fashioned print shop that used to do letterheads and business cards, they printed up 500 business cards that said Dave's Lawns. And when we got home, he said, you go knock on the closest 50 doors in the neighborhood, and you ask them if you can have the opportunity to provide their lawn care needs. And I did it, and it worked. I got 27 yards to cut at 12 years old. I learned customer service, and I learned keeping your word. And I remember having all kinds of little businesses all the way through school. I made little leather bracelets that you would stamp people's names on and paint them in and sell them out there hawking them by the lockers. And I've just always worked. And so when I graduated from high school at 18 years old, I sat for and passed my real estate exam. Mom and Dad owned a real estate company, and so I started selling real estate while I was in school. And then I took off the other end of the state, the University of Tennessee at Knoxville, and took my license over there, worked for a guy over there, and I worked 40 to 60 hours a week while I was going through school. And I graduated from school basically broke, but not deeply in debt, because I've been working.
My wife, Sharon Ramsey, she is a central element, a Proverbs 31 woman. Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, and he will have no lack of gain.
Sharon and I got married and started literally with nothing.
You know, I remember when we first got married, we were so broke, it was unbelievable. We bought our first two pieces of furniture, an oak couch and this oak pedestal table. If it could talk, wow, the stories it would tell.
But eventually, after doing some selling real estate for a builder, I started buying and selling real estate in my very early 20s, just a couple of years after getting married. And it worked. A little bit of family connection with some bankers and stuff that knew me and trusted me. I don't know why. I was 22 years old, 23 years old. But they started loaning me money, and I got rich. I ended up with about $4 million worth of real estate, about $3 million worth of debt. So that difference is $1 million net worth. And at 25, 26 years old, I was making $250,000 a year, cash taxable income. That was amazing. I mean, the neighborhood I grew up in, $20,000 a month, that's rich. I was rich. I mean, we did all the stuff we had dreamed of doing, and I'd always wanted a Jaguar. That was my car. I dreamed of having a Jaguar. I set that goal back when I was in college, and so I got my Jaguar, man, and everything seemed to be going right. It was incredible. And our first baby was born, Denise, and then and we're cooking along, and, you know, about the time we started going to church, and I met God in the process. And weird thing happened. It was right about that time that everything started falling apart.
September 22nd, 1988. I remember that.
The banks got sold. Main bank we were dealing with, we had $1,200,000 with them in 90-day notes because we were buying property and flipping it. And that bank got sold to another bank. And the guys in another state, in another city, looked down and said, you know, there's a kid 26 years old here owes us $1,200,000. This is ridiculous. Let's limit this relationship, which is banker talk for call his notes and screw up his life. So they called our notes, gave me 90 days to come up with $1 million. There's no way. Started to crash. I couldn't stop. Word got out on the street that I was in trouble, and I was in trouble. And our second largest lender, we had $800,000 out with them. They called our notes about 60 days later after the first one. So we had less than 6 months to come up with $2 million, and it's all in real estate. You can't sell real estate fast enough to pay that bill. We'd never lost money on a deal. We'd never been late a minute on a note, ever. That didn't matter, though. They just decided that they were going to limit their relationship. They were in freak-out mode in the economy that we were in right then. And those two hits started a crash that we fought for 2.5 years.
No one wins without paying a price. The scripture says no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful.
We sold everything as fast as we could. And it doesn't matter what you do. When you pile up stupid as high as I piled it, it's going to fall down and you can't catch it all. So no matter how hard I fought, no matter how smart I was, no matter how much I kept my word, no matter how much I was going to do the right thing and pay everybody, it didn't matter. I couldn't control the outside variables. And I remember being so scared.
Sharon and I, there was a lot of separation between us. She's pretty freaked out and scared, pretty ticked at her husband.
I didn't have any answers. I was the guy that had all the answers. The weird thing was we paid the $4 million down all the way to $378,000. It was unbelievable. But some of the little ones, we had been sued hundreds of times, it felt like. I don't know exactly how many it was. It was close to 100 easy. And one of those little lawsuits decided on that they were going to execute on the judgment, and they arranged with the sheriff's department to come take the furniture out of our house on a Friday morning. So September 22nd of 1988, we met with a bankruptcy attorney.
That night, we signed bankruptcy papers. I'll never forget that.
He filed them on Friday morning. So we filed bankruptcy on the 23rd to keep the sheriff out of our house and keep him from taking the baby bed. I was out of gas. I didn't have enough emotional energy to fight anymore. I mean, we were just beat up and beat down.
Right after that, we started finding out God's word had something to say about money. And this really wasn't the end of the story.
So I met God on the way up, but I got to know him on the way down, without a doubt.
Friends, I'm pretty candid about my lack of financial prowess. Money and numbers are fairly Greek to me, so I need a lot of guidance. One of my closest friends is a wildly successful wealth manager, and I'm working on some financial literacy and just continually seeking guidance. So I ask you to check out yahoofinance.com. Nobody knows it all, and Yahoo Finance is an incredible resource for the rookies like me or the seasoned investors. You know, before my dad passed away recently, Dave Ramsey and his wife Sharon flew down to visit. We all got to spend a day together, and I was at yahoofinance.com just now. I saw multiple news flashes from Dave and other people that you respect, and they're hitting so many of the hottest areas in finance today. So it's a place to get a snapshot of all aspects of your financial interests, and if you have them, your portfolios. I hadn't realized Yahoo Finance is the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. So for your comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. One more time. yahoofinance.com. Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top-tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Kevin. Most of today, you will be indoors, likely your home or your office. I am as well. Even with my treks out into the woods, I spend a lot of time inside. And we're going to take about 20,000 breaths. According to the EPA, the indoor air is 2 to 5 times more polluted than the outdoor air, sometimes up to 100 times more polluted. At my studio, we have heat being forced through old ducts. I walk on carpet full of years of junk. No idea what's floating in the air that I'm taking constant gulps of. The solution is an air purifier, and Air Doctor is just the best. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants and allergens such as pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold, bacteria, viruses. They do it so your lungs don't have to. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Go to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Kevin, and depending on the model, you'll receive up to 39% off or up to $300 off. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. So to get this special offer, go to airdoctorpro.com. Use promo code Kevin. AirDoctorPro.com, promo code Kevin.
I started studying biblical finance and comparing what the Bible and common sense has to say about money, comparing that with what I had learned in academia, because I've got all these letters and licenses after my name that says I'm supposed to know something about money, but there I sat broke. I started applying new ideas like a budget and like an emergency fund and like getting out of debt and staying out of debt. And we had a guy at church come up to me not long after and said, "Hey, can we have a cup of coffee with you and your wife? We're going through financial garbage and, you know, it's about to tear our marriage apart. And it looks like you all made it. How did you make it?" And we're like, "Well, we barely did. So we'll talk to you though." You know, so we had a cup of coffee with him. I guess that was my first financial counseling session probably. I got a budget out. I remember getting the yellow pad out saying, "Dude, you got to do a budget. Tell me where's your..." And I'm sitting there trying to look at his numbers, and I thought, "Man, I can... does it really work? I can really show people how to win with this." And I could see it instantly in other people's situations, I guess because we had been there. I got a friend of mine who says having a testimony is a great idea, but getting one's a pain.
The scripture says no discipline seems pleasant at the time. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it.
We've spent a lot of our time and effort in not only being educational, but being aspirational, to lift and to make people believe. Because when you believe, you can do a lot of things that really don't even make sense. It's crazy what people can pull off when they believe they can, and it's crazy what they can't pull off when they don't believe they can. I've watched a lot of people file bankruptcy that were not bankrupt. They were just scared. The light at the end of the tunnel was an oncoming train for them. They didn't believe that there was anything out there that was real, that they could turn the corner. They were hopeless. And that broken spirit, there's almost nothing that can overcome it.
but the fuel is the hope.
When we did the class, we cut up the credit cards. I took them and ground them all up. I looked at this thing every day and shook my fist at it.
You're going down.
You are going down.
I lost my job. Sorry. And I fell behind on everything.
Pretty freaking scary, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. You have no idea.
Yeah, I do. I've been there. I think you're going to have 100% of it paid in less than a year. That's what I predict.
Not having a future plan for our kids really was a big, big motivator to us to say, hey, we can do it. Look at all these people that are doing it.
The thing that kept us going is the support group that the radio station really is and what you're doing.
I'm glad we were able to help you. And if you need some more help, you call me anytime. That's what we're here for.
It doesn't make sense in our story that we were able to pay down from $3 million in debt all the way to $378,000 in debt in 2.5 years. And I was 26 years old. That doesn't even make sense. It's not logical. And we still didn't make it. But the fact that we got that far into it was because we really believed we were going to make it. And when it ended was when we didn't believe anymore. So that sense of hopelessness, I got a barometer, I've got a meter, I can smell that on people, I can feel it on a call that's coming in when I'm sitting in a book line, I can look up and see it in somebody's eyes, and I'll just stop a second and talk to them and pray with them and give them a couple of little pointers or hook them up with one of our counselors, because they came in there, they weren't looking for a book. They were looking to believe again. Our mission statement at the Lampo Group says, the Lampo Group provides biblically based common sense education and empowerment which provides hope to everyone in all walks of life.
That has been our guide. It's not a brochure filler. It is who we are. It is our mission. That's what that says.
We realized really quickly that people whose numbers would work, they couldn't turn it around because they didn't believe they could turn it around. Zig Ziglar used to say, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And that's hope. When I was a kid, we would build campfires out by the lake. We'd go camping with our families and everything, and they'd make the kids get up all the driftwood, and then we'd be ready to light the fire, and it was always wet, and you couldn't get it light and everything else. And so one of the old redneck guys would always have a can of gasoline, and you know, he'd throw some gasoline on there, and we'd light the gas, boom, instant fire, right? But that's what hope is. It's like the gasoline on there. It sets you on fire and allows you to go do things that you never dreamed you could do. We opened a little counseling office. Russ Carroll joined me. We taught our very first class in March of 1994, called Life After Debt, with a bad suit and an overhead projector. I thought, well, I'll teach this financial stuff I've learned the hard way. And the little class had 37 people in it, and when I finished teaching it a few years later, there were 350 in it. So obviously we'd touched a nerve, we'd found a need. And pastor came by, one of my associate pastors, and said, you need to write your story in a book, because God gave you this story and it's different than other people's story. It gives people hope. So I came home that night and I wrote what was, I thought, the opening chapter to Financial Peace. Ended up being the foreword. And so we're just living hand to mouth doing real estate, and yet I got this bug about this financial stuff. And so at night, I'm over at the church doing a counseling session, or at night, I'm sitting at my computer typing. And so that little blue Financial Peace book was born. We took it to a printer and printed up the first 1,000. Oddly enough, I had been on a radio show as a guest, and this guy was doing this show. We used to laughingly call it the Bad Financial Hour, like a Saturday Night Live skit. Nobody listened to this station, so we went on there. He and I talked about that for a little while, and he had gone broke in real estate too. And so we just started having this conversation about going broke. And I said, yeah, I'm actually helping people over at my church sometimes that are in foreclosure and stuff. And the phone started ringing, and we took some calls. And he goes, that was pretty cool. You ought to come back. Let's do that again. And then the guy quit. And a buddy of mine called me. I'm in the mutual funds business. And he says, hey, we need to go down there and do that radio show. That guy quit. And he goes, listen, it'll be fun. I'll do it a couple days a week. You do it a couple days a week. And, you know, you can look at it as a ministry. And he knew about the book I had just written. And he said, who knows? You might even sell some of that stupid little book you wrote.
You got to get this cleaned up for the sake of your child.
Right.
Been worth it, though.
Well, good for you. When you keep doing smart stuff for 5 days, you have a good result. You do smart stuff for 5 years, you really start to see a thing take on a life of its own. You're making good progress, kiddo.
Yeah, we're trying.
There was immediately a gravitational pull because of we were offering instruction, which gave hope. We were given answers that stuff nobody talked about out loud.
It was like the secret that nobody discusses, the dirty little secret that everybody looks good but is broke. And we opened that can of worms and it just blossomed. The weird thing is that we went on the air June 25th of 1992. That same week, the phone rang. The printer was on the line and he said, your books are ready. And so I drove out and got my books and we filled up the car with them and put them in the trunk and strapped the trunk down with a big piece of rope, and the car's driving like this and I'm driving home. And I remembered in my prayer time that God had told me he was going to give me a way to sell the book. And it was going to be so unusual that I wouldn't be able to take credit for my marketing genius. And I'm driving home and I suddenly made the connection that that little radio show was going to be how God was going to sell this book. And I just became overwhelmed. I had to pull over to the side of the road and I just sat there and cried for a minute. It was amazing. And to this day, I don't take that for granted. All of this stuff started from primitive, humble beginnings that would give you no indication any of it was going to succeed.
But I want to challenge you. Live like no one else so that later you get the opportunity to live and to give like no one else.
I look back and go, this radio show, one of the largest talk radio shows in all of North America right now, the book Financial Peace and how it took off as a result and has now had literally millions of families go through it over the last several decades. You know, there's no way I could take credit for it. I've worked hard, but when I look at the way that stuff lined up, that was just God's gift. It was just what's called a blessing.
We're just regular people from Antioch, Tennessee. We're not anything super special. We just did the stuff I've been teaching you and tried to figure out what God's telling us to do and doing it on a regular basis.
We're just Joe every guy. I started with nothing, did stupid stuff, the failure part, and the belief that I can still go out there and win. Everyone's story has an arc to it. Everyone's story has a problem and the opportunity to overcome the problem and then a resolution. Sometimes it's more or less zeros. Sometimes, it's someone from a little different culture, or they started from a different mindset, a different family upbringing, but they still have that same story arc, and it's still a story arc of hope. And so we unashamedly use our story to help people, to make them believe that they can win. Sharing a story or handing off a story or connecting to a story. In our case, you would do it because it's someone that needs hope. I can hand this Total Money Makeover book, I can hand this Financial Peace book, I can hand this class or a tickets to a live event or just a link to the radio show. I can connect this hurting person with this story of resolution. We're all intertwined that way. Because it turns out our story is always your story. They connect. And that connects to another one, and that connects to another one. And that's how this whole thing has happened. There's nothing about the story we would change. We would have changed it while we were in it, but looking back on it, there's nothing about the story we would change.
Dave Ramsey, welcome. I can't exactly remember when I did last see you in person. It was either at your lake house or at the Eagles Club that I visited with my dad years back. But it's been a while and just so grateful to have you on the show. And I do trust that you're well, but I'm going to lead off by asking you, what are you today excited about?
Well, thanks, Kevin. It's good to be with you and Tom. Been friends with both you guys for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. We're excited about our future. I mean, we've been working really diligently and really intentionally about succession and transition, which it appears I've got somewhere around 15 years, God willing, the creek doesn't rise. To be able to do that. And so we're raising up these other voices in our brand. We call them Ramsey personalities and setting them up. The first one that we launched a book with was my daughter, Rachel Cruz, who we ended up with a number one New York Times there. We're launching a book in January with Chris Hogan that we anticipate being a number one as well on the New York Times. He's a fabulous speaker and teacher and content provider, and we've got several other of these Ramsey personalities in the leadership space, the money space, and just looking out in the future on that, we're really excited about that. We're also really excited about the transition of our company to digital platforms. We're really concentrating very hard on that, and we're seeing some incredible scalability and cost savings there that for us and then for our customers that are amazing. Stuff like this new Every Dollar Budget tool that's just broke over 1 million users, and we just launched it in May. It's free to use it, and it takes about 10 minutes to set up your budget, and people are doing it. 1 million people can't be wrong.
Dave, that's just amazing. I want to say I've been on Every Dollar. It's fantastic. I heard Chris Hogan and Christy Wright last year at the Entree Leadership Summit. I know you have another one coming up, and I would highly recommend if you're wanting to grow your own business and be a leader in your organization, that is the place to go. So you've poured into our life here at Ziegler for many years, and I'm excited that you are working on the transition plan for generations to come. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, it's a fun thing to do. It gives you something to do that's a little different than just saying, okay, after everything that's happened to us over all these years, now we're working for more than just my brand or just for money. I mean, money's fine, get you some, but, you know, eat enough lobster, eventually it tastes like soap. So you got to do something fun with it, and that's plan out the future and how we can do like your dad used to say, and, you know, if you help enough people get what they want, you're always going to have what you want.
Well, and I believe we have an interview with Chris Hogan lined up, and I believe after that maybe Rachel and some of your other personalities. So and we had a great interview recently with Ken Coleman. So honored to bring your corral in here. Well, in the show intro, Dave, I shared with folks that I have a little history I'm blessed to have with you. I mean, you and your bride Sharon have been close friends, of course, with my parents Dan and Joanne Miller for decades, and I think I met you originally through Mike Hardwick and Christ Church somewhere around early 1993 when I was newly married. And of course, my wife worked for you. I think she thinks of herself as maybe your first employee even. But I did a little bit. That's back when you were in Antioch and the cheap seats of Nashville that you talk about in the video that we just heard. And I remember taking those little blue financial peace books around to wherever you got them. Somebody to carry them, whether it was a small bookstore or a gas station, and babysitting your kids that are now not kids anymore. It's been a long journey. So years later, you've grown obviously dramatically. And, you know, I remember I had my one real job that I ever had was 2 years with Churchill Mortgage, and they did some primary advertising with you, and I was VP of marketing over there. And I know Mike Hardwick's, his big intent was to get more business elsewhere, so it didn't totally rely on the Ramsey Show, which was wise. But then nearly two decades later, I mean, you've made Churchill nearly a household name, I mean, franchised across America, just as you've made so many other businesses household names. It's significant what you have done in creating this empire and establishing a movement in the culture that will forever be memorialized. As you were just talking about, you're looking at the succession of that. So I want to dig in some to this message. And now, first off, though, as I do in every interview, I want to hear how you came to know of and be such a fervent evangelist of Zig Ziglar himself and the message he started. The Ziglar Incorporated, you know, message is spreading today. And I know you were one of the first people, along with Seth Godin, to sign up to do a testimony in the upcoming Ziegler documentary, which is a huge honor. But what's your initial Zig story, Dave?
Well, Tom and I have laughed about this many times, and Zig and I did when he was still with us many times. And Mom and Daddy were in the real estate business, and so my dad got probably one of the very first cassette recorders I ever saw. It was a big old clunky thing, but boy, he put in that Southern Mississippi drawl and drop that cassette in there and Mr. Ziegler comes on and starts telling us that, you know, you will hit what you aim at. So you need to be real careful what you're aiming at. And I began to learn, I was probably 12 or 14 years old, riding around the car with this big cassette recorder in the front, Daddy making us listen to that stuff. And that started it. And then, you know, many years later, I get my real estate license. I was 3 weeks after I turned 18 years old, and Zig was in town, and of course, he was an icon, and we were, you know, nobodies. I had never met anybody like a Zig Ziglar, and he had a big event in Nashville, and I got in there early and got on about the third row, and he dropped down on that knee on the front of that stage and started telling us we could be anything we wanted to be, and you know what? I believed him. And it was a long love affair after that with him from a distance, and then, of course, we were able many years ago to hook up and became friends in the later stages of his life, the last decade or so, I guess, and certainly been friends with Tom a long time and Miss Jean. And but yeah, the man is just the teachings. I still get them and listen to them. Tom still sends me a link to something that he's working on, and passed some of it to some of the young pups around here the other day, and tell them, you know, this is how it starts, people. You need to listen to this. This is the real stuff.
Absolutely, man. I'm beyond blessed that I get to do that every week. My job is listen to Zig and break it down, and what an incredible gift. I mean, so Dave, in your story, I mean, you tell the story of course, the wild success you had early on in real estate, 20 grand a month or so in income, which would be even more, you know, today, decades later. But you were enjoying and reveling and all that money could buy. You had great connections, took big risks, went big, then lost it all. Today, you've come back with, of course, an incredibly healthy and true platform that far surpasses the, I imagine, the wildest dreams you may have had back then, and are a celebrity in our culture today. And I don't say that to flatter, it's just that it's a true story, and it's what we just heard about in the video. But I want to help people really relate to that well. And they may not have lost millions. Of course, we've all seen people crushed by a couple hundred bucks. But I mean, your story has been unbelievably redeemed. And do you feel like your personal story was a cornerstone in many ways and somewhat unique in its depth of crisis in order to help many others not go through such trials?
Well, absolutely. Larry Crabb says that many people who are have a transformative message for others are walking with a limp. And most of us are what he calls wounded healers. And so it's not unusual for any of us to find an area that we failed in and for God to take that very area and use it to not only redeem your own life, but then to be an inspiration to others in that same area. And all it is empathy. I mean, we're just connecting with people where they're hurting, and it's believable versus someone who's never had that experience. And so, you know, when someone calls a radio show and they're hurting and scared and crying and broke and about to lose their house, I remember that. I mean, it was 30 years ago, but it feels like it was about 20 minutes ago in my emotions. And I still jump in my throat when that guy calls and that gal calls and they're all torn up. And so, you know, I think it's a good friend of mine says, you know, having a testimony is a wonderful thing. Getting one's a pain in the butt.
Yes. I actually pulled that. You're stealing my thunder. I pulled that out of the video. It's a great line. Okay. So on that note, this is something I literally have pondered, and this will be relevant for both you guys. I mean, many, of course, if not most, big success stories, such as your own, Dave, I mean, they come on the heels of massive failure stories. Then you go forth with that hard-earned wisdom to help others not suffer those immense trials, which is totally logical and vitally relevant. And I've said in so many years of my own consulting, I think I am, you know, kind of like a crash test dummy somewhat of business. I think we all feel like that to some degree. But I'm curious, it's the big dive that made you. I mean, that's what we just listened to in that video. I mean, that big dive, that crisis, it made you so much. So in that, we are trying to help others not get to that point, you know, not suffer to that degree. And yet it's that suffering that made us. It almost feels like a little bit of a conundrum that what made us strength, what gave us that wisdom, what gave you that wisdom. We want to help other people not get there. And honestly, I think about this as a parent, Dave. You know, I'm wanting to keep my kids from some of the stupidity that I did. And yet I'm somewhat, and you said this at the end of your show, there's some things that in the moment you would have regretted, but right now you don't because it added into so much. I don't have a point there other than to ask you, where does that fit in? Have you ever had that thought of, gosh, I'm trying to save people from what made me so strong, gave me that wisdom? Of course, we're going to save them. But sometimes I don't know. I've pondered that thought. What are your thoughts? For those of you who have taken action with an online business and are taking payments online, you need to check out Braintree. Braintree is the source for easy mobile payments. Maybe you're working on the next Uber or Airbnb or GitHub. Then why not use the same simple payment solution that helped them become what they are today? Braintree makes mobile payments so fast and easy and seamless, it's just nearly magical. I mean, add it to your app, and with just a few lines of code, you're instantly ready to accept Apple Pay and Android Pay, PayPal, Venmo, credit cards, even Bitcoin. And if some other way to pay comes along, they'll support that too. So Braintree's fast payouts and continuous support mean you'll always be ready, whether you're earning your first dollar or your billionth. You'll see fewer abandoned carts and more sales with Braintree's best-in-class mobile checkout experience. So check it out at BraintreePayments.com/Ziegler. That's BraintreePayments.com/Ziegler.
Well, I think we all know that most people who are appear to be successful in any area are actually colossal failures. Hmm. And the only difference is they're standing on the top of all the failures rather than laying under them. And, you know, you just learn from it and you climb up on top of it and go, I'm not doing that one again. That hurt. That left a mark. And so I don't know that my failure made me. It did give me some traits that that allowed us to be able to accomplish some things. Number one, I realized I didn't have enough inside of me to pull it off, which that was a new revelation to that arrogant 26-year-old kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm laying there broken. And then the second thing I realized is what the Bible says. The Bible says that God speaks very clearly to us. He says that in our weakness, his strength is made perfect. And so I got to realize, you know, that, you know, you can plant the corn, but you don't get to make it rain.
Yeah.
That's God's job. And so there's this strange mixture between our hard work and doing the best we can do, and then God just showing up and causing it to rain. And so, that, you know, some people err too far on one side or the other. They think it's all up to them, or they think it's all up to God, so they don't do any work. And there's this mix of doing those things. And I think the third thing that happened, Kevin and Tom, is that I look back on this now more than any other time, is when I'm training up new leaders and new personalities around here these days, I lost the ability. I realized when I went broke and I thought everything in my world had come to an end, and a lot of people that I thought were my friends or I could trust suddenly abandoned me. And I survived.
Uh-huh.
I survived. I didn't die, you know. And so it kind of took away this idea that what somebody thinks about what we're doing, if they're going to be mean or nasty about it, or even if they're going to be positive about it, really doesn't matter. You know, and so I don't really get stopped by someone looking at me and going, well, you know, you really can't do that in the radio business, or you really can't do that in the you know, you can't get a high school curriculum in high schools with a message like yours. You can't, and I'm like, well, yeah, well, maybe you can't. But
right.
It's just what they think does not enter into it, because I guess I was so concerned before when I was a young man of what people thought, and I should probably be a little bit more concerned than I am now, but I completely lost what the Bible calls the fear of man. And so the need to impress or be impressive or the need to or the ability for a hater, so to speak, or a troll or whatever to keep me from going forward, or somebody that gets mad on our team and quits and storms out of here or something like that. Like, well, like I'm not, doesn't mean I'm going to quit. I'm not going to quit. This is what we do. And so, you know, I think that fear of man thing, lack of a fear of man, has allowed us to just go forward. And it appears to be bold, but it's not really. It's just like this real observation that these people positively saying things or negatively saying things really don't end up influencing whether we win or not. It's all these other factors that causes us to win.
You know, Dave, it reminds me, people ask me throughout the years, you know, how come your dad is so powerful on stage? What was his gift or his ability, you know, to really go into a room and just fill it? And be so bold and fearless and say politically incorrect things in a way that people just accepted. And I think it boils down to what you just said. There was, you know, when Dad became a believer, it really was after he was broken. And so as I studied it, he had the spirit of brokenness, which simply meant that he knew there was nothing of eternal significance that he could do without God's help. And when he got to that point, he realized that he only had two responsibilities. One was to have a vibrant relationship with God, and the other was to speak the truth in love. And when he made that, when you could just see that in his life, that realization, that meant that he had no responsibility for how people accepted that message.
That's a great line. That's exactly right. Yeah,
and
that's what I'm saying, but you said it much more eloquently.
Yeah, and so when you don't have any responsibility, then it's not a popularity contest anymore. It's just so he would go out on stage And he wasn't trying to please the man or woman who was paying him or the people in the front row. He was trying to please God, and he knew the only way he could do that was to speak the truth in love. And that's what gave him the ability to go places and say things that nobody else could say.
Well, you guys are, as often happens in these shows, stepping on my personal toes a little bit. I mean, that aspect of feeling responsibility has always been a difficult part in my own leadership with folks. So that's a word I continually need to hear. So you talk about belief. I mean, you've talked about it today. It came up in the video, and you cite so much, Dave, of your effort is to make people believe. And you said in the video, and this is a direct quote, if you believe, you can do a lot of things that really don't even make sense. It's crazy what people can pull off when they believe they can, and it's crazy what they can't pull off when they believe they can't. And then you go on, and this goes right to what you just said, Tom. You said, Dave, in the video, that broken spirit, there's almost nothing that can be done to overcome it, which, I mean, again, this is the heart of Ziglar, whether the topic is faith, marriage, money, business, whatever it is. I mean, all the steps to success are moot if you don't get to the core root. So money and finances is where you began, Dave. And now, of course, you have a big focus on business and other areas of life. But at the core, you're coming back to that root person and their personal belief, which is fueled by hope. So you then went on in the video, said that sense of hopelessness, I have a barometer. I can smell it on people. They aren't looking for a book, maybe. They're looking to believe again. So when you get down to it, do you feel like, Dave, I mean, that's a core calling, to help people believe they can overcome in their life? Again, whether it's finances or self-image or whatever is their primary obstacle or Achilles heel, that your job is primarily that, help them believe.
It's hope is exactly what it is. You're okay. Right. What Proverbs says, hope deferred makes the heart sick. And when desire comes, it is the tree of life. Mm. And so when you've got hope that is messed up and hope that is, guys, we're getting some kind of interference. Are y'all hearing that?
I'm not, actually.
Something's stepping on your signal or something. Is it a mix minus, Bobby? It's not, is it? Okay. I'll just go forward. You can edit that out.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No.
Okay. So, we just tell folks around here that really the product that we sell is not books or live event tickets or radio advertising or anything else. What we sell around here is hope. Hope that you can do it. And when you believe you can do it, you can do a lot of things, not everything, but you can do a whole lot of things that a lot of people don't think you can do. And so hope gets stolen from folks by life beating them up and by messages in the marketplace. You know, you can't do this because the economy is structured as such that if the government doesn't come in and correct wealth inequality, you'll never be able to be anybody. And yet 88% of America's millionaires are first generation rich. And so started with nothing, according to Tom Stanley in the book The Millionaire Next Door.
Right.
So, there's a lot of things that are possible, but as soon as you try to tell a hopeless person that something's possible, you get that old Ziglar thing. You see it. It's called stinking thinking, and it's right there, man. And you see, and really, their thought patterns and their belief system are affecting their future more than the reality of their circumstances.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And, Dave, one of the ways that I'm different than my dad is I'm a nerd. And as a nerd, I like the research. And I was doing some research on it. There's actually a sequence to change. And the sequence has three core words: optimism, creativity, and systems. And until there's hope or optimism, your creativity is bound. You don't have any ability to see the future. And so what happens today is when people address a problem, they either focus on their creativity or their systems, and they don't fill up their hope bucket. And if you don't have your hope bucket filled, there's only fight or flight. That's the way we react when things are negative. We run away or we keep banging our head doing the same old thing. And so when I've watched you in your presentations and the audience, you're doing that combination of giving people that little bit of inspiration, that hope, that idea that, hey, I did it, you can too. Look, here's another person who did it, you can too. And like Dad always said, he said, never give a promise without a plan. And that's what I love most about everything that you do is you call them baby steps. which is a plan that anybody can implement. And so the hope is built and then a plan is put behind it. That's where creativity and systems come into place. And a system is just a habit. You know, it's the same word. It's just two different applications. So in finances at home, you got to have the right financial habits. And at work, you got to have the right systems. But that's the sequence. That's what I think back when I look at the genius of Dad. And I knew he knew it, but it came so natural to him after watching so many people that he always planted that hope. He always created that identity. If I can, you can. And then he gave people a plan to move forward. And that's where creativity and new habits were unleashed.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. I mean, this hope and optimism thing, without a practical application methodology, it just falls flat and it comes off as hollow. And, you know, people roll their eyes and make fun of it. Oh, those are positive thinking guys. Well, it is. It's because they're dreamers. They don't have any practical application to the process. And if you just do practical application, you're called a boring college professor. There's no hope or inspiration behind it. And you can do that if you got tenure, but you can't do that in the open market. People won't come to your deal.
Right. Hey, on this topic of hope, Dave, I want to come back to something that you said. I wrote it down just minutes ago, and you were talking about on one side, relying on self. So being alone, in essence, that's like an Achilles heel for myself, is relying on self. But then on the other side, you said, or you're relying only on God and you don't do anything, which is not taking responsibility. And you mentioned, you know, there's a mix and went on. That crux right there is significant. And give us a little content on that. Where do you find that mix of relying on self or totally relying on God, not doing anything, and having a healthy balance in between?
Well, I think the healthy balance is what you're looking for. The old quote that is attributed to St. Augustine, some argue about that, but he used to say, supposedly, if you work like it all depends on you and you pray like it all depends on God.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the balance. And then when you get there, you know, you can sit around and go, you know, yeah, I'm a turtle on a fence post, which if you ever see a turtle on a fence post, you know, somebody put him up there. He didn't get up there by himself. Oh. So God must have been involved, you know, because I can look around this place and see with our team and the wins that we've had that I've worked really hard, and I'm fairly smart. I'm not the smartest guy, but I work most people, but there's a lot of people work hard. A lot of people smarter than me, and they've not had the success that we've had. So what can you attribute that to? Well, there's only one possibility, and we call it God's blessings. So you do reap what you sow, so you have to plant something. That's the hard work and getting smarter and personal growth and reading a nonfiction book all the time and, you know, growing your capacity, growing the cleanliness of the vessel that you are, your righteousness, your maturity, your academic acumen, everything. Those are things you can add to. You can add to your capacity personally. And then you do all you can do, and that's all you can do. And the farmer does that, and then he prays for rain so that the crops come in. And sometimes it rains and sometimes it doesn't when you've done all you can do. And that's just the ebb and flow and the natural flow of life. But I, you know, as an evangelical Christian, I run into people who are just saying, you know, well, we're praying about that, which sometimes, not always, but sometimes is Christian code for I'm too lazy to go do something. that made some people mad.
That did
already.
Too.
But,
yeah.
I said sometimes, you know,
right,
other
right.
times people are honestly, earnestly praying, and that's a real thing. And obviously prayer is an important part of our faith system that we engage in. But sometimes it's Christian code for I'm sitting here twiddling my thumbs and I've, you know, well, God, why haven't you shown up? And, he's, you know, saying, because you're lazy. You haven't been faithful in the little things. I can't give you more to manage. And Scripture's pretty clear about the cause and effect relationship on those kinds of things. And so, no, you know, the thing you want to be careful is not to be thinking you're all that, and so it's all up to you. I've often heard that saying, if it's to be, it's up to me. Mm-hmm. And I always kind of think, well, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's part of that's true, but not all of it. And so I'm not God, and I don't get to be Messiah. I don't get to tell him what to do. So I'm going to do all I'm supposed to do as best I can figure out, and then he shows up and does his part. And so I'm not going to be completely waiting on God, and I'm also not going to think I can do it all within my power. And when you can strike that balance, you've got a pretty cool spiritual walk at that point, and you get to see some neat stuff happen. It's not a perfect formula. Like, again, you're not telling God what to do, and I can't tell you 100% of the time the results are always positive. They're not. Sometimes it doesn't rain after you till the field and you put the corn in the ground. The dirt just looks at you. But other times, you get a bumper crop in, and you got to be careful and go, well, I'm a really good farmer, and God made it rain.
Yeah, that's just, we got a sermon going on here. I want to ask you, Dave, about your mission statement for the Lampo Group. Would you state that for us?
Well, for Ramsey Solutions, we slightly changed it for the first time a couple of years ago,
okay.
First time in our history. And today it reads, Ramsey Solutions provides biblically based common sense education and empowerment, which gives hope, capitalized and italicized and bold, to everyone in all walks of life. And that's the little part that was changed because we've entered spaces other than just money, and we're looking at some stuff in the marriage space, some stuff in the parenting space, we're certainly king in the money space, and have a real strong brand in the leadership and small business space. And so, but it's, we want to give people common sense, education, and empowerment, which gives them hope.
Okay, I love that mission statement, and I want to hit on that statement of common sense just in an effort to empower some folks here. So you say common sense, though, to some degree. I mean, you know well, and I think I've even said that in today's culture, so much of this wisdom is not common anymore. I mean, if there were, we wouldn't have a need for some of us to be speaking it, and so many world changers that are speaking what we would think to be common sense. I mean, the truth is we do die for lack of knowledge, me chiefly, I would have to say included. So I want you to speak on this, as there are so many people, so many folks listening right now in the Ziegler audience, just as in your own audience, who have a passion for a topic and an issue that's hurting people, and they can help provide solutions. But they so often think, and I hear this, and I know you do too, oh, someone's already said that. I mean, isn't it just common sense? I mean, I've got some really good financial abilities I could offer people, but guys, they've got, Ramsey's out there. Who am I to say anything? And they know the info is just so readily available, and is that common sense? Who are they to be a purveyor of it? But the world needs new voices, even though, I mean, for you, you're the current biggest voice in money and finance and business to such a great degree. But will you be the biggest and the last? Is there room for others? Not after you're gone, I mean, but even today, isn't there room for more of that common sense?
Oh, there always is. And Benjamin Franklin used to say, there's nothing more uncommon than common sense. Mm. And so it's always been that way. And growing up in the South, my daddy always called it horse sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what horse sense means. I guess it's something to do with having sense on how to handle a horse. But it's like it was supposed to be common sense. Another way of saying it, I guess, is street smarts. You have street smarts, mm-hmm. and can you function in the marketplace, mm-hmm. and play well with others? Are you relationally intelligent? And those things come into play. But what's interesting is very seldom do you find things that cause people to become inordinately successful to be things that are a new invention. A brand new idea that no one ever thought of. The vast majority of people who become inordinately successful do something that's already being done better in a way that is more accessible to the market in some way, with a twist, with a flair, with a smile, with a wink, with a nod that no one had done before. And so it's just not rocket science. I'm spending a lot of time these days interviewing and researching millionaires, and I'm actually doing a millionaire theme hours on the show to expose this information that I'm finding. And these interviews with these millionaires are just straight up boring because they all sound exactly the same. They all worked 25 or 30 years and put money in their 401k every month and stayed away from debt, and the most expensive pair of blue jeans they ever bought was $40. I mean, they all sound just alike. Now, some of them are doctors, some of them are aircraft mechanics, some of them work in the produce department of a grocery store. A guy yesterday for 37 years, he's got $2.7 million. But, wow. I'm like, how'd you do that? I just saved money my whole life, every paycheck. I put money in the 401k. It all sounds – all he did was the same thing that everybody knows to do, and some people do. He just did it better and more steady, and so he's inordinately successful. And really, that's all it amounts to. You can outwork most folk. and go in there and tell the truth, and if you smile, oh my gosh, now you got a complete competitive advantage.
That's significant. I mean, I wanted to talk about that, so I'm going to go ahead and dive in there. You guys have a big focus, entree leadership, of course, you know, on business. And in reference in your video here, you said your own company, what you're doing today started from such primitive, humble beginnings that would give you no indication that it was going to succeed. That really captured me. And then you went on to say everyone's story.
I mean, you and Terry were in the living room with the guard table. There weren't any indication we were going to be a big deal.
I remember in that first little self-published book, I literally still have. I think
it wouldn't have given you a nickel for our future. I mean, we were just out there scrapping and clawing. If somebody told us we were going to be this big, everybody would have laughed.
Gosh, well, how many people are at that place today?
That's the point. I mean, you got a little book, throw it in the trunk and go sell it.
Yeah.
Get your friend's daughter-in-law to come over and help you for 3 hours a week and be your first secretary, if you want to call them that. You know, I mean, just draw back and do something, for goodness sakes, because you don't know how it's going to turn out. I can tell you how it's going to turn out if you don't do it. It'll never happen. That old thing that Jordan said, I missed 100% of the shots I never took. Just take the shot.
Gosh. Okay, so right there. So you said in there, and it was right after that last statement on primitive humble beginnings, everyone's story has a problem. And we keep coming back to, you know, to hope. And on that, everyone's story has a problem. You said that. I mean, I'm a big fan of Donald Miller. I love his book, A Million Miles in a Thousand Years, where he says, you know, a good story is about a character who wants something and overcomes conflict to get it. And that overcoming and hope and these themes we keep coming back on. I mean, in all of your years of doing what you do, Dave, it's a big question, and I apologize for that, but why is it so hard for us as people to change? I mean, what do you see as primary roots for that, I don't know, stubborn inertia of our lives that's so hard to stop and get ourselves to redirect? I mean, you've mentioned a couple of things, you know, peers, what other people think of us and such, and just our habits, but where do you find yourself constantly coming back to, whether it's in the show with callers, whether it's across the table from somebody you're at lunch with, and it's so difficult for them. They've got that spark of hope. They know there should be more, but why is it so hard for us to change that inertia?
It's fear. Fear every time. Sometimes it's fear of real things, you know, fear of touching a hot stove. You get burned because you would. Mm-hmm. But most of the time it's the old thing, false evidence appearing real. It's just, I'm scared to death if I became successful that I would become one of those jerks. I'm scared to death if this happened, somebody wouldn't like me. I'm scared if I made this decision, somebody wouldn't approve. I'm scared that if I put something out there, I might do it wrong and, you know, I might get sued. I'm scared. People are just dadgum scared. And again, I go back to the original part of our conversation where when I went completely broke and I didn't die, I lost all that fear because I didn't die. And it's like, okay, this really is just a game. This really is. Let's go throw the football. Interception. We'll throw another one. You know, I mean, let's get back in the game. And it just changes your whole deal. And I don't recommend going broke as your methodology for learning it. But what would you do if you weren't afraid?
That would be, I have that. It's in my kitchen hanging up somewhere there. It says, what would you do if you knew you could not fail? Which is so easy.
An old line that's been around forever and probably a Zig line. I don't know. But, if it wasn't, it should have been.
We'll attribute to him. Well, that is okay. So fear or false evidence appearing real. In this, and you've come to it a couple times, you know, coming to that, everybody has a problem. That everyone's story has a problem. Do you generally see, folks, that what they cite as a primary problem is often their primary opportunity?
Well, obviously, that's a cliche that's been around forever. And the reason it's a cliche is it's often true. Mm-hmm. And so, I see it a lot. I certainly do. It's an opportunity. But most of the time, what they need is what Tom was talking about a while ago, they just need a plan. And when you have a plan and you go, oh, if I did A plus B plus C, I would get E? Wow. I could try that. And they've got a bite-sized plan that they can bite off, and they go take the first bite, and they're able to chew it, and they go, well, okay, now I did that. So now the character in our story starts to become the hero. And what Donald talks about all the time so beautifully, and he and I worked on this stuff together for years, he's just brilliant, and I learned so much from him. But he just talks about, you know, the bright companies in story branding are making sure that their customer is the hero, and that you, as the company or the brand, are the guide. And so I spend most of my time being Yoda. I really don't need to be Luke Walker. The people doing the debt-free screams are Luke Skywalker. Uh-huh. I'm Yoda. I'm the little ugly guy in the swamp.
All right. Well, that's an image right there.
Yeah, you're cracking us up, Dave. Oh, and Dave, one last thing. When you talked about horse sense, Dad always called that stable thinking.
Nice, boom. Nice. I love it. I had not heard that one. That's great.
I had not either. Dave, man, I am so grateful for this. It's going to bless a lot of people. I got one last question for you. And this is one that I often have a personal curiosity with in regards to influential people like yourself, just in your own personal development walk. We all have our areas of strengths and weaknesses. Where is your personal Achilles heel in your personal development, the thing that you have to work the hardest to overcome? And that word overcoming has always been curious to me, because I think we logically sometimes take that term to think overcoming means totally eradicate it. And I have so many weaknesses that I feel like I don't know if I'm any stronger in that weakness today than I was 20 years ago, but I found ways to manage it and to produce anyways. But so in your own self, where do you find a personal Achilles heel? Just this is Dave, this is a weakness, and how do you manage it so that you produce anyways?
I guess most of the time, one of your strengths is your biggest. Now I got to mix minus completely.
Yeah, I heard that.
Got it. Okay. I guess like a lot of things, oftentimes your biggest strength is your biggest weakness. I was interviewing a guy doing some family business research, and he and his brothers had taken over for his dad, and they were able to triple the size of the business from $1 billion business to $3 billion business.
Wow.
And $1 billion business is no slacker, so daddy was obviously brilliant. And I said, so how did you do that? And he said, well, we put systems and processes in place from that we'd learned in academics that dad didn't have. But you need to understand, dad was brilliant. The stuff was already here. It was low-hanging fruit, and we were able to triple the business on stuff that was already here. We just systematized some of it. And then he said this line. He said, the quirky brilliance of the founder will only take you so far. Huh. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. Because I'm a founder, I'm a starter. I started this, and the quirky brilliance. So, I've got a quirky brilliance. I don't know if we call it brilliance, but a quirky. I can see stuff, and I do quantum leaps straight to it. I can visualize something. We launched this business boutique thing. I saw that very, very clearly in HD. The very first day we had the idea, I could smell the need in the marketplace with Christy Wright. I knew where we were going with that. I just knew it. I knew it. I knew where we were going. I'd see every detail. I could see how the product line was going to roll out. I could see how the women were going to interact and react. I could see how the market was going to perform on it. I could just tell. I mean, there's a lot of nuances and details you don't know, but mm-hmm. I could see that real clearly. And I quickly went there, so quickly that I left my team behind. And, you know, the guys on my leadership team often, that's a weakness, is I do a quantum leap. And while I might be right or I might not be right when I do that quantum leap out of a quirky brilliance, you know, you look up and you're supposed to be leading and nobody's back there.
right.
So it's not, it's a good thing that you can see stuff, but it's a bad thing if you go visit that place but don't take anybody with you. So that's something I work on. And the way I solve it, you ask how I solve it, is accountability. I mean, I've got leaders here that are not wimps. If you want yes men leadership teams, you wouldn't want to work here, because this bunch calls it out like it is around here, and that includes calling me out. So we all get in a room, fight like a bunch of hillbillies, so we solve something, and that includes calling me out. So if that happens, they call me out. Sometimes I get credit for it if I do it right, but if I get too far out there and I leave the team behind, it's a bad thing, and I'm not always right. So sometimes I'm driving over there in the forest and I get lost, and you got to be careful with that. So your biggest strength is usually your biggest weakness, and in my case, accountability has having strong people in my life that don't have a fear-based culture around them where they can speak up and call something what it is. It keeps me a little bit more attuned to where I'm doing a lot better with that. I'm a lot more sophisticated with how I utilize that gift now, and so that it doesn't become a weakness.
Well, in that, gosh, talking about accountability and people you have around you, I don't know how many stories I've heard related from my dad, Dan Miller, on your Eagles Club that you guys have had for, I don't know, how long has it been, 10, 15 years more?
I think it ran about 14 years.
Did it? Okay.
We called it about 3 years ago, and it had run its course. But, boy, it was a blessing while we had it.
Well, and that sparked so many. I know from my dad talking about it, so many people wanted to know how to instill that in their lives, how to get people around them, and especially the right kind of people. And you just said the kind of people who are not fear-based. That's significant, of course, to find the people that you relate to, that you respect. So great. So I hope everyone heard that, you know, accountability is as a primary way that you, Dave Ramsey, deal with your own weaknesses. Dave, such a gift to connect with you again after all these years. And I'm astounded and blessed by what you've done in our culture and helping people. And I've been one of those people that have been helped by your personal anointing. But thank you for taking the time to come on The Ziegler Show, share with our audiences. And folks, I do want to call back. Everybody, of course, DaveRamsey.com is where you can find everything they have to offer. This new tool that Tom talked about, mentioned, I went to it as well, EveryDollar.com. Looks incredible. I'm going to show it to my wife and look at us embracing that as a tool for our own finances. Dave, thank you for blessing us and giving us a bit of your time today.
Well, thanks, Kevin and Tom. It's an honor to be with you guys, and good to hear from you again. Holler back sometime.
We will.
Appreciate you, Dave. Keep changing the world, brother.
Thanks, guys. God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye.